and welcome to the Original Content Podcast. I'm Anthony Ha.
I'm Jordan Crook.
And I'm Daryl Etherington.
And we are back, I believe, on our regular stay-at-home schedule, which is twice a week. We took off one of the days last week because I was on a little staycation, which I highly recommend to everyone. Even though you can't travel, it's still nice to take a couple days to catch your breath. But I'm back now, and we're back podcasting this week, or today rather. We are going to review Tiger Tail, a new film on Netflix. It is written and directed by Alan Yang, who was a writer on Parks and Recreation. He also co-created Master of None. This is pretty different, though, from what we expect from him. I think we think of him as this funny guy, sitcom guy. And Jordan, in our chat before we started recording, you were talking about this as one of the most depressing movies you've seen in a long time. Talk a little bit about that. Talk about your feelings, Jordan.
I technically said it was one of the more depressing movies.
More depressing. I think it does. Yes, let's be precise.
That, like, yeah, more not most situation. I mean, it's, I think that it taps into something that is maybe particularly poignant in my life at my age. I don't know how or when you guys went through this, if you have yet or whatever, but I think everyone as they grow up has this realization of their parents and how human their parents are, and how flawed their parents are. But sometimes, like, it feels like that flawed piece can actually come in this wave that is really overwhelming, and you don't then give them the benefit of the doubt either, right? Like, you don't, and it happens not just with your parents, it happens in all things. Sometimes you know, your bosses may have access to information that you don't have, right? Or your friends or your significant other has this layer of information that you don't have access to, and so your perception of them or the way that you see them or think of them is changed by the amount of context that you have. And this movie, you know, trying not to dive too deep into spoilers, I feel like is really in a lot of ways about that, about how this one character has these motivations and intentions that I perceived as very, very pure, and lives a pretty sacrificial life, the way that I see it. And the people around him don't see or have all the information. And they don't see him for what I believe he is, which is a very sacrificial son, father, husband, who has put other people before himself, and most of them see him as selfish, right? And that to me was pretty tough to watch. Like, it just was really kind of depressing to watch. But it is, I will say that is a beautiful film. And you know how I am. I like kind of, the stress test is, can you get my attention in the first 15 minutes? Because otherwise I'll probably be on my phone. And I double stress test this. I was really distracted when I first turned it on. And by the end, I was glued. I was glued to it and really focused in for the last, like, you know, hour and 15 minutes or so. So it really grabbed my attention and was a beautiful film, but definitely not an uplifting watch.
I would say that for me, it was, it's definitely a depressing film in for long stretches. And I think both because what a lot of what happens in the film is pretty sad, but also because it's about a lot of characters who, you know, aren't super expressive about their feelings, with a couple of notable exceptions, which we can maybe talk a little bit about in spoilers. But and so there's this kind of gray, muted quality, not just in the visuals, although I think a lot of the imagery is sort of gray and bleak too. But there is just this sort of sense of sadness and restraint over a lot of it. But at the same time, I didn't walk out of it feeling sad. I felt by the end like they brought it to a conclusion that wasn't it didn't feel like artificially uplifting, but didn't leave me feeling like I was just crying or anything like that.
Yeah, I do think the ending does have like this tinge of hope for what the future might hold for those final, you know, the two characters it kind of ends on. But it was a slog to get through for sure, emotionally for me. What did you think, Daryl?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. I thought it was, I didn't find it was that depressing. I thought it was just kind of like, you know, it was bittersweet and it was kind of just real and like a, I guess this is an actual, this seems like a real person's lived experience and that's kind of how life works way. But, I thought it felt like the episodes from Masters of None where they did the like retrospective on people's parents, but like extended into a movie in a good way and in a somewhat bad way. Like good in that I really liked it and I felt it was the same type of story and charming, but bad in that I don't know that it benefited that much from being a full hour and a half long movie as opposed to a 40-minute episode in an anthology series. So, I mean, it was nice to have some of the additional depth, but I was also kind of like, I don't know, I felt a bit like maybe some of the things were overtold or whatever. I don't know. I felt like, and it wasn't even that long of a movie. I just felt like it could have been shorter still and had the same kind of emotional impact. But I mean, I still liked it. I just, I found it, yeah, like kind of like a nice little portrait of a life that is a little bit sad in the way that I guess for me, like I imagine all lives to be somewhat sad and then, you know, but not like heartbreaking, just kind of like, oh, that's like a nice thing to empathize with. And then just be like, that's kind of how we live. Other parts, obviously I can't empathize with, like there's immense difficulty and like huge challenges they have to overcome in terms of like, when he'd moved and left his parents and the decisions he had to make are like decisions that I will never have to make in terms of like partnerships and things like that. So yeah, but I mean, I really enjoyed it. It didn't to me feel super depressing as much as just representative of kind of what people have to deal with.
Like the fact that I found it so depressing kind of screams at my privilege, just because like I'm pouting over the fact that he chose a more pragmatic partnership than one, you know, based on love or, you know, like some of it, I'm probably coming at it from a relatively spoiled point of view, which isn't so fair, but I wanted everything for him, like from the moment that we meet him as a little boy. I just like wanted, you know, I felt attached. And also the, you're going to have to help me, Anthony, the actor who plays the old version of him.
Mm-hmm. I think his name is Sima.
He's like one of my top, he's like one of my favorite actors. Seriously. He's in so many things and he almost always plays this very tough leader character. It was cool to see him in a slightly different role. And I'm pretty sure that this is the first role I've seen him in where he smiled, like a big, wide smile. And I was like, oh, I didn't know what this guy looked like when he smiled. But yeah, it's probably, you know, eye of the beholder situation here, you know, where I maybe am coming at it from a slightly spoiled point of view. Like you were saying, Daryl, like decisions we'll never have to make. Were hard to watch him make because you're just like, oh, I want you to have true love. I want, you know, I don't know. It was tough.
I mean, so we should say that the basically the film is about this character named Pinjue, I think. I will also admit right now that even though I am myself Chinese American, I have really no strong background in Mandarin or any of the other Chinese dialects. And whenever a real Chinese person hears me try to pronounce anything in Chinese, their face just like stretches out in horror. So I'm going to mangle these names as well. But I'm going to take the bullet because at least I feel like I feel comfortable making a fool of myself in this way. But it's about, so there's sort of these two timelines. One is focusing on Pindre's like childhood and, you know, his days as sort of like a young man where he had this love story in Taiwan. And, but eventually he comes to America and has a family there. And so then there's this contemporary thread tracing his relationship with his daughter, which is not very good or emotionally expressive. And so we sort of jump back and forth between, you know, this fairly fast-moving retelling of most of his life and, or you know, basically his life up until, let's say, you know, 30 or 40, and then the present day. And I mean, I thought like overall the movie was strong, and I definitely, even though you know, a lot of the background on my parents from my parents is different, I like recognized a lot of elements of their story too. They also immigrated to the United States as you know, while relatively, you know, as young adults essentially. Well, they immigrated for college, and I think I had that same realization that you were talking about, Jordan, where, I mean, I think I realized that my parents were flawed people before I really thought about them as, oh, like one, at one point they were children and then adults with their own desires and ambitions, and not just, they didn't just exist as my parents. And I thought like this movie did just like a really great job of capturing that. I would say that in general, I had a slight preference for the scenes, the flashback scenes. I thought they were, I mean, I think frankly, they just had more plot. Like there's just more stuff that happens to him as he's, you know, figuring out how to leave Taiwan, trying to establish himself in the US, versus the contemporary things are really more just about the relationship with his daughter and a lot of scenes of them not communicating, which I think are for the most part well done, but, you know, don't quite have the don't quite capture my attention the way the flashbacks did.
Yeah, I think also, I don't know if there was, I could just be like dreaming this up now, but I think that there was a change in the filter or the color scheme for the ones that it just felt, even in the bleakest of scenes in the past, it felt brighter and more colorful. And like the way that the scenes were edited, for example, there's a scene where he is working at the, is showing like the passage of 5 or 10 years or something, where he, maybe not 10, 5 years, 3, 4, 5 years, where he's working at this deli and opening and closing this gate. And I thought that was just a beautiful way to show the passing of time. You know, filmmakers go do creative things with some of that throughout in many different films, but I liked the way that was done, and it just felt brighter and like it was slightly more captivating than what was happening in the present. And like you said, there's very little, you know, there's maybe one or two scenes with any plot or dialogue or action that are set in the present. There, it's a lot of sitting, looking silently, eating from a bowl of food, you know, watering plants, and you're just like, okay, I get it. Yeah, he's lives a lonesome life. I get it, you know.
Right, and a lot of cutting back and forth showing that they both sort of live these sad, lonely lives, he and his daughter, which I think, again, is well done, but, you know, there is a point where you're kind of like, okay, I get it. And I mean, I did also want to go back to what Daryl was saying about sort of, I think there are definitely some clear parallels with the parents episode of Master of None, and sort of how it sort of expands that idea to movie length. And I felt sort of conflicted, because I think, again, the stuff about his early life, if anything, felt like it could have been longer. Like so much of what we see is basically one scene that establishes an idea and then they move on. And so particularly that he has this both childhood friendship and then eventually romance with this woman, Yuan. And I feel like I really wanted to see more of that because, like, you know, I certainly was invested in that relationship, but it also felt a little bit sketched in that you just sort of had to accept that they were, because of the chemistry between the actors and what they said to each other, that this was sort of like the great romance of his life. And I just thought like a lot of that stuff could have used a little bit more room to breathe. Whereas I thought probably the contemporary stuff could have been, it did feel like this little short story that had been sort of stretched out over many scenes. And
I thought
so
that
I think
was
maybe
intentional.
Yeah. And I don't think it was like bad exactly, like but I did feel like this weird thing where on some level there were some things that felt kind of thin and rushed. And then at the same time, there were other things where it kind of felt like, you know, the opposite, where it was like, okay, no, I got it. We don't need to sort of necessarily keep going back to the same point.
Right. I hear you on the latter point, like the monotony of the second relationship, you know, marriage felt really drawn out. And I do agree that it felt very brief, our time during his great romance. But I think I kind of give the filmmaker a little bit of credit for the fact that that was the way that it was, because I don't know about you guys, but even in its brevity, the poignance of that romantic relationship hit just right. I wanted them to be together. I felt like they were in love. I was rooting for them. Even as quick as it happened, I was completely bought into it. And the monotony of that marriage that followed, and the kind of boredom and lack of common interests and all of those things, it was long for a reason, because it was long in his life, right? And it was like, yeah. Oh, and every minute that it went on left me thinking about Yuan. And I think that was the point, right? Like, is that ever going to happen? Is there any chance he'll get back with her? Is she still around? Is she married? Like, and I think that that's probably what was running through his head every day from that moment on too, right? And I think that that is how you were supposed to feel, you know? Like, you want more of what happened before and less of what's happening now, which is exactly how he felt.
Yeah, just to be clear, actually, when I talk about the monotony, I was thinking more about just the scenes between him and his daughter, and just sort of the repeated scenes of them failing to connect and then them separately also not connecting. I do agree that, like, I think I don't think it's a spoiler to say
that. I could have done with less of that, too. Yeah. Like, the eating alone. Right. Like, yeah. Here's him eating alone, and here's her eating alone, and they continue to eat alone. And it's like, all right, we've seen that. We don't need to see that 4 more times.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Whereas I do think that, you know, I think this is revealed pretty much in the trailer, and so it's not exactly a huge twist, is that he doesn't, that this romance that they focus on at the beginning of the movie is not who he ultimately ends up with and has a daughter with. And so that other marriage, I actually did, it's harder to watch because it's not, you know, this sort of, you know, flush of young love, and it's not happy, but I did find it incredibly compelling, because I found one of my favorite things about the movie was that it didn't treat his wife, as this just purely as this side character, but that she had clearly had her own desires, and I felt like was a really fleshed in person who I in many ways I found her to be the most compelling character, because she's the one who sort of got stuck with this guy who isn't necessarily interested in being married to her or is, you know, married to her for fairly opportunistic reasons, and because of also the sort of traditional roles in their marriage, has to lead a much more constrained life in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that I really, even though that section of the movie was really sad in a lot of ways, I thought that was some of the best scenes in the movie too.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think I also would counter. I felt like there was some, I at least had a few moments where I was like, oh, who does he end up with? And like, I thought it was going the way it was going, but there was a couple moments of uncertainty where I wasn't 100% sure. Mm-hmm. But which I thought was kind of interesting and maybe intentional, but like, yeah, I did find her character pretty interesting, and I'm glad they gave, at first I was kind of thinking maybe they were not going to give enough focus, but then they did, and they, I think they gradually added quite a bit more, and this stuff with her friendships that she's sort of comes up with when she, or the, that she makes when she comes to the US is really interesting too. But yeah, I think I agree with you that the stuff that I felt like could have been that cut or that did lag the stuff a bit was where the focus on him being sort of alone and I guess reserved or whatever, but like the rest I felt was meaty and like should have been there, right? I think I don't feel like they padded it. I just feel like they really wanted to emphasize that point, and I could have done with a little less emphasis. Like I think the point was well made already before that.
It also hit one of my pet peeves, which I fully acknowledge is not necessarily something that everyone shares or should share, but it's the thing where when you have flashbacks in a movie, I feel like you can either just cut between the past and the present and not really sort of explain it, or you can have some sort of excuse for the character to be thinking about the past. And this movie sort of takes that latter route, which is fine, but it leads to so many scenes of the older Pinjoy sort of sitting there staring off into space. I was kind of like, yes, no, we get it. He's thinking about the past. You don't have to show this for every single flashback. But again, I acknowledge that's probably a very individual response.
I don't think so. I think it's fair. That dragged a little bit. They were trying to, I think the main point of it was to hit home that like he and his daughter actually have more in common than they realize. And, you know, for me, even more than my kind of desire for him to have gotten a life with Yuan, which I think was one of the biggest things I felt throughout the whole thing, was his daughter being told the story, right? Which I get, you know, that's kind of where we're trying to go with the whole thing to begin with. But actually, I don't want to even go any further without heading into spoilers. Do you guys have more initial impressions?
No, I'm good.
I think I'm ready to move into spoilers too. So why don't we do that? If you don't want to find out, you know, the later developments in Tiger Tail, you should stop listening now. But yeah, Jordan, go ahead.
Yeah, so like, you know, the way that I read all this, and you know, tell me if you guys disagree, was that most of the decisions he made were not for himself, right? He decided to go work in the factory to be with his mom and be close to her and help provide for her. He decided to leave Yuan and marry this other woman, Zhenzhen, I think her name is, to essentially make enough money for his mom to retire and then move out there with him and be with him. And he, even with like, we see a flashback of his daughter kind of screwing up at a piano recital and him telling her not to cry, you know, crying doesn't solve anything. That harkens all the way back to what he learned was best, right? To not show weakness and to, you know, be strong. And it just felt like almost everything that he did wasn't for himself, you know, it was for someone else. And yet his wife sees him as selfish. I mean, even maybe you could consider, you know, for a while there, he was really trying to fit Zhenzhen into the slot of Yuan, right? He took her to the nice restaurant, and you could tell he flirted with the idea of dining and dashing, which is something he did with Yuan. You know, she was a little bit more wild and carefree and reckless, which I think he loved about her, and then didn't even ask really. And then he got he played the records and thought, hey, do you want to dance? And she didn't seem to want to dance. And he got the keyboard or whatever that exact thing was. I'm sure it has a name that I don't understand or don't know, but got the keyboard and tried to, you know, convince her to play with him, and she didn't. And yet at the end of all of it, she sees him as some broken, selfish person. And that just really got under my skin, because that's just not how I read that going. I felt like he made a conscious effort to try to find love with her, to try to provide for a family, to try to help his mom, who didn't even want to come, you know, eventually. She just changed her mind and decided she didn't want to come to the U.S. I mean, and his daughter sees him again as this kind of hard ass who has no feelings, no love. And yet most of what he did was for the people in his life. And I more so than wanting to see him end up with Yuan, which I did very much, and wish that we could just go back to that moment and he could stay with her, particularly considering how everything panned out. I also just wanted his daughter at the very least to see and to know the story and to understand the intention that came with all of these decisions and this life that he had led for, you know, 60 years, and see the sacrifices he had made, you know?
I mean, I have a slightly different interpretation. I mean, I think you're right that ultimately I see him sympathetically and as somebody who made a lot of sacrifices for his children or for other people in his life. I think that at the same time, well, there's a couple, I think there's specific, I think you could, we could talk specific, about the way he treats both Yuan and Zhen Zhen, I think is not exactly ideal, because, you know, he leaves Yuan without telling her why he's leaving or really having any sort of, and I guess, I mean, this is sort of a classic kind of even contemporary relationship debate of, you know, how much do you want to just ghost somebody or have this extended, painful breakup explanation or talk. And then also the way, I think, you know, particularly, I think that Zhen Zhen is totally entitled to call him selfish when she does, because I think that there's a scene that we see not that long before that where she wants to become a teacher, and he says, and she wants to basically build a life outside of their marriage. And because I think, you know, he's very invested in this traditional idea of family, he sort of dismisses that immediately. And that's not to say that he's entirely selfish, but I think that I would understand why at that point in their relationship she'd be like, fuck this, I don't want this anymore. And so I wasn't angry at her for saying that. I felt bad for him, but I felt like she was totally entitled to say that. And I think that maybe a lot of my interpretation of that comes down to is also my feeling in general that there's this argument that I've certainly had with my parents, and I think is probably true of a lot of people of our generation, but especially the children of immigrants, is this attempt to balance, yes, you have sacrificed a lot to get me where I am, and I don't want to diminish that. At the same time, that doesn't mean that every decision you make now or even then was correct. And so, like, we can, for example, understand where his sort of don't cry comes from, like why he, you know, is very attached to this idea of like crying doesn't solve anything. But like, we can also say, like, it's pretty fucked up that he was screaming don't cry at his daughter as she cried after making a mistake at a piano recital. Like, I feel like that's part of what I think is good about the movie, is that it can both recognize what's sympathetic about him, but also recognize his flaws.
Yeah, I think similarly, like, the Jordan brought up the mother not wanting to move, but I don't think she changed her mind. I think she just said, no, like, that's in the later scene anyway, she said, like, that's what you wanted for me, but I'm happy where I am, right? Like, I think a lot of the things that he thinks he's doing for others are not actually what those other people want, right? And or need. Like, he's presuming a lot, which is in a way its own kind of selfishness, right? So, and I don't think, like, the movie is criticizing him and saying he's an entirely selfish person. I think it's just saying, sometimes when you think you're acting on behalf of others, it's not necessarily about that. It's more about yourself, right? And that's neither good nor bad. That's just, like, something you should acknowledge and pay attention to, right? I mean, it is bad, right? It's worthy of criticism. But overall, it's not like anybody's perfect. So, like, how much can you really criticize that? But I do think it's saying that, yes, like, he is a person who has done a lot of who has faced a lot of self-sacrifice in order to do this, but also be cognizant that like your self-sacrifice involves choices, and that sometimes you make those choices on behalf of others, and perhaps it's not the choice they would have made, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get that. But I also feel like Zhenzhen didn't come, like, meet him halfway, really. Like, even in their first... So, like, you look at their first date, you know, and obviously he's in love with someone else. So I get it, you know, if she felt the vibe there and was, like, a little standoffish. But he's like, how do you like school? And she's like, it's fine. What do you want to do? I'm not sure. Maybe teacher, maybe nurse. Like, she isn't even participating in the conversation. And it felt like that throughout. He's like, well, what do you want to, you know, you want to dance? You want to, let's, you know, he's, I felt like he was trying, and she really didn't meet him halfway. She never put forth an effort to find, oh, well, what is something that we could have a common interest in? He was throwing ideas out, and there was never a scene where she threw any ideas out of, here's something we could do together, or here is some way we could connect. Like, she was just kind of like silently there. The only time she ever said anything was something completely focused on herself. And I'm not saying she shouldn't have been allowed to be a teacher. That was, you're right. I agree with you, Anthony, on the fact that, of course, that hardened her to him. You know, that's her, what the life she wants outside of their marriage, and she is entitled to that. But you, how do you come with just that to the table? Come with something that, you know, he's trying to find a way to connect, and she's covering his little piano thing with books and stuff. Like, try, you know. That just frustrated me. I didn't feel as sympathetic towards her as I did to him, just because I felt like he at least made a somewhat of an effort to connect with her, you know.
I had a really different experience of that, in the sense that I read their initial date as, again, that they were sort of two different people who were like thrust into this incredibly awkward situation. And for her, that certainly he was the more socially outgoing one. And that I recognized that he's trying to put effort into trying to build some sort of relationship here. But I read like how she responded at that first date in particular as just like absolute painful shyness and like not knowing how to talk to him. And then I agree that, like, I mean, I don't think that, again, I don't want to like, I don't think it was this narrative of a woman oppressed by a misogynist man. Like, I don't think that's what it was. I think it was a marriage that failed because of both of them. And I think a lot of what they brought into the marriage and who they are. But like, for example, I mean, I would say that one very specific thing is in the dance scene, it's that I think it's a little bit different than what you laid out, because it's not that he asked her to dance. It's that he plays the record and talks about how he used to dance. And then she says, in this very, well, first she says she does not dance. It embarrasses her. And then she sort of, in this very hesitant way that makes it clear that she's not excited about it, she says, did you want to dance? And then he's like, oh, no, it's fine. And I think, so it's not purely on her side. I mean, it's clear that, like, yes, she could have noticed that this is something that he cares about and done more to meet him halfway, as you said. But I think also that, I think ultimately he decided that I'm not going to go for this. I don't want to try to, you know, for whatever reason, maybe generous reasons, if we're not trying to recreate an old relationship, we have to build a new relationship or what have you. But it wasn't one where he purely reached out and she just pushed him back. It was where both of them, I think, failed to make a connection.
And that's like a string that runs throughout, right? Like, his greatest flaw is the fact that he like doesn't really give to take, you know. He can't, like, he never really truly says, like, here's what I want from my heart. He just makes decisions that he thinks are best for the people around him and just kind of goes forward with them, which I get. I'm with you guys on that one.
Yeah, but I think, that's exactly what I think with those scenes. Like, I felt like, I definitely felt more sympathetic to her than I did to him, because I felt like maybe he was trying, but he wasn't really trying. He was just kind of assuming she was like the thing that he lost, right? Which is also sad in its way, but like, all of his attempts were about another person. They weren't about her. And so it was sad, right? Because it was like, you didn't really take the time to get to know her or what her interests were.
Yeah.
And I think this stuff with her friendships shows that she is a caring, warm person who enjoys like social interaction and an activity. It's just not the kind of thing that he was after. And he was assuming she was like the person that he wanted to be with, right? Which is definitely sad.
Mm-hmm. Scenes I wanted to talk about towards the end are just, I thought he does eventually reunite with Yuan, played by Joan Chen as an older woman. And they have this lunch together that, I just thought was like both like probably my favorite scene in the movie, just cause like, it was like the one scene where two people didn't have, this failure to connect, or at least the one scene in the second half of the movie where it wasn't just sadness and distance, but it was like two people who clearly could just, after many decades, they were able to reestablish their connection right away. And there was obviously this sort of sadness that comes up because it becomes clear, because my hope, of course, is that maybe now there's a chance to make up for past mistakes and they can rekindle their romance, but it becomes clear that she is married to somebody else. And but it was just, I thought, just a really like lovely scene where like there's some sadness but also a lot of connection and joy. And then that, after a little bit, some other things happen, eventually leads to the ending of the movie, which is where Pin Jui takes his daughter Angela to Taiwan and tells her the story of basically everything that we've seen in the past. And I thought that was like, I mean, it was kind of like, that's where what I guessed was going to happen. But I thought it was well done and like a really good resolution to the story, I guess, particularly because then it ends on this scene of him talk like revisiting this house, which I think even as a young man he had all this a bit of like shame and secretiveness about, because it was so run down and indicated how poor he and his mother were, and then he just starts talking about it and he starts crying for the first time. And I just thought like all of that was really well done and exactly the right way to end the movie.
Yeah. I agree with that. I thought the end was pretty hopeful, and I had been, you know, just, it had been painful to kind of wait for him to just tell her, you know, for better or worse, whether he was sacrificial or selfish or whatever it is, her lack of context totally was misshaping her opinion of him and the way that she saw him and the way that he felt about her. And I just needed her to know, you know, so that was good, and the fact that he could show a little emotion. I also thought it was super important that it was his lunch with Yuan where she said, no one can open up to you if you don't open up to them first. You know, mm-hmm. People need to know who you are before they can show you who they are. And I thought it was really important that it was her, someone he really trusted and connected with and had opened up to. You know, she was the one who he brought home to that rundown house that he was ashamed of and kind of made a little insecure joke. I told you it was fancy, you know. And she said, I like it, you know, and she accepted him. And this one person in his whole life, I mean, I guess other than his mom, was like, hey, maybe just tell your daughter a little bit about how you're feeling and what's going on with you. And she might be able to take more comfort in you as her dad and be able to lean on you a little bit more and learn from you a little bit more if she had understood you. And I did really like both of those scenes.
Yeah, I thought the other thing it captured really well was sometimes when we talk about connecting with our parents, it's so much about this idea of like being able to be emotionally honest with each other. And I think that for some, maybe this is like a reflection of, you know, some of the limitations in my own relationship with my parents, but I do think that also that sort of like love and connection comes out in other ways. And so like, I like that it wasn't just a pure, you know, just, like, he didn't suddenly just, like, take her in his arms and say, I love you, you know, I'm proud of you, you know, you're my only daughter and I care about you no matter what. Like, that didn't happen. And instead it was, like, different gestures. Both, like, the scene where he does the dishes with her after the party, and they sort of sit together drinking tea, which is still sort of awkward and sad, but like feels, you know, like a little bit more comfortable than some of the other scenes between them. And then, you know, going to Taiwan and not, you know, again, getting like super deep on his feelings, but just being like, this is who I am. This is where I come from. I can tell you this story and you know about me, even if I'm not necessarily, even if our whole relationship isn't necessarily completely different overnight.
Right. Yeah, I like that it wasn't like overblown out, you know, that progress that they were making was felt very realistic. And I think that, like, I don't know about you guys, but I feel like my viewing of this is so shaped. I mean, everything is like that, right? Your viewing is shaped by your own experience and who you are. And I have just such a different, my dad is like the most sensitive, loving, like, to the point where I'm like, Dad, I am fine. Like, you can, I'm good. I will come to you if I need you. You know what I mean? So it's just a completely different, never been too hard on me in my life, right? Like, and so that obviously plays a big piece of it, where I think that my desperation for her to understand him and for them to get to some warmth, you know, was so heightened for me. But I'm glad that it didn't lean fully 100% into it, where I'm here for you and I love you, honey, and you know, like, I'm proud of all that stuff. That would have been such a departure from reality for those two people, you know?
Mm-hmm. What did we think about the cast in general? I mean, we talked about Sima, and I think he's great as the older Pinjui. And then there is an actor, Hong Chi Lee, who plays the younger version. And I think he's also great, just like incredibly charismatic. I mean, in general, I thought the cast was pretty strong.
I thought he was so dreamy, young Pinjui. so I agree. Dreamy. And I thought all the casting was pretty well done. You know, I liked the actress who played Chen Chen, and the contrast both in looks and voice and personality to Yuan, really, like, I thought was well done. You know, they were both beautiful in their own ways, but they were so different. You know, and that really even hit it home even harder, his kind of like longing for the love and connection he had with this other woman, and the kind of distance and coldness that was existing in his marriage, I thought was heightened by just the casting alone.
Yeah. Is there anything else that we want to talk about from
is
Tiger Daryl Tail?
Is Daryl okay? Are you here?
Yeah, no, I'm all right. I'm all right.
Are we giving you space? Do you have thoughts, or you're just not really, you're like, whatever for this?
No, no, no. I really enjoyed it. I just, I think I thought the acting was pretty solid across the board. I think, the one who played the young, oh goodness, what's her name? Who became the singer?
Became the
like his first flame, like she was a singer.
Yuan,
yeah, she was really good. But yeah, I, in general, I thought everybody did a good job. But I don't know, I really liked it. I thought it made me more pensive, but it was a good one. Recommended watch for sure. And especially, I think it's like, again, I said I felt like it was maybe felt a little bit long, but it's still a very, you know, digestible hour and 30 minutes, which is nice. I don't know about other people, but I have like real hard attention span problems at the moment, so it's nice to have a movie that's like, yeah, that's bite-sized like that.
That's totally understandable. I really, really liked the scene where they're singing the
Otis Redding song.
Sometimes scenes like that, either they're too good of singers sometimes when they let actors kind of sing, they're too talented, which kind of ruins it. And then sometimes they're not talented enough, which makes it uncomfortable, like early American Idol auditions moment. And sometimes the actors themselves just don't have the chemistry to pull off what is inherently awkward. Like, you have to have a lot of intimacy for two people in real life to sing a song together and for it to not feel weird. You know what I mean? I'm not even sure. I've been with my girlfriend for 5 years, and I'm pretty sure we could sing like one bar of a song together before we're like, okay, this is a little weird. Let's stop. This is awkward. And I thought they managed to pull that off in a way that didn't feel anything but good. You know, it was just like, oh, so sweet. And they sound good. She obviously sounds slightly better than him and more on key than him, but he also has an okay voice. And I don't know. I just really loved it. I thought it was just the sweetest thing.
Yeah, overall, their chemistry was really, really good. I think that was one of the strongest parts of the whole thing, because it's like so crucial to the story that they have terrific chemistry and that the other relationship be kind of stilted and awkward and always have a distance. And I felt like they really nailed that in both partnerings.
I mean, I would say a smaller thing about that scene that I really liked also is just I have this sort of sensitivity to scenes where people speak English in broken Chinese accents, because I think so often that's used for comedic relief. And so just to have a scene where, you know, that you can tell that neither of them, at least the characters, I don't know about the actors, but at least the characters, or neither of them is a native English speaker, but they're singing this song that is in a foreign language to them, but they're still singing it well, and it clearly means so much to them. I don't know if I can think of another scene that works that way for me. Like, I had this initial sort of like tensing in my back when they started singing in English in this accent. And then I sort of was like, oh no, this is really good. I really like this. This is great.
Yeah, me too. Not necessarily for the English bit. I don't think I paid as much attention to that, just as, oh God, they're going to sing. And her voice was beautiful. Just beautiful. And then he joins in, and I thought, oh God, no, he's gonna ruin it. And he made it better. And I was just like, oh, chef's kiss. Mwah.
Yeah, this whole discussion, I think, is actually, I mean, I liked the movie when I finished it, but maybe had more reservations about it. But just talking about it with you guys has really made it clear to me how much the stuff that I think is good in this movie really, really works. And I totally recommend it. It's not a perfect film, but overall, I'm really glad I saw it. And I'm glad that they made it and Netflix is putting it out into the world.
Yeah.
Same. And one final note that has nothing to do with that, but Quibi, I went through a whole roller coaster of emotion.
Oh, yeah.
The moment that we ended the podcast last week and was like, oh, man, I found the perfect use case for Quibi, which I actually think is the perfect use case when you end like a 30-minute conference call and it ends at like 11:22 and your next one starts at 11:30. Bam, Quibi, because you can't really get anything done in 8 minutes except for maybe a little email, which is fuck email. And then I realized that it's one episode per day. So if you, like me, got way deep into Most Dangerous Game, good luck with that. You're going to have to wait like 3 weeks before you can actually enjoy like an hour of that show. stupid. But I still am addicted to Most Dangerous Game and I'm excited to watch the next episode today.
And we should say that, I mean, they, one thing that we acknowledged, I think, in the episode, but was that, you know, we didn't love how it's limited to the phone and you can't watch it on any other device. They had already said that they were eventually at least open to the possibility of building compatibility with Chromecast and bringing it to the TV and on other devices, and it sounds like they're going to accelerate that plan, that they've heard what people want, which is they want to be able to watch Quibi on their TVs too, and it sounds like we'll be able to do that at some point soon. And with that, let's wrap it up. Before we go, I will just remind listeners that they can always email us at originalcontent@techcrunch.com. Let us know what you think of Tiger Tail, what you think of this review, if there are other things you want us to review. And if you send us something substantive, we will read it on the show. And it's always helpful if you subscribe and leave us a positive review in Apple Podcasts or any other podcast app. And thanks for listening. Daryl and Jordan, I will talk to you soon.
Yeah, have a great rest of your day, guys.